The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we begin the final hour, and we are really looking forward to our next guest. He is David Kellum, who is the voice of the Ole Miss Rebels. He has been part of that program for going on four decades. And, you know, what a time to be at Ole Miss with the football program under Lane Kiffin, the basketball program doing quite well, and then the baseball program only being number one in the country. We had one of the stars of the team on the other day. And David, I know Fridays are pretty busy times with baseball and everything, but we appreciate you making time for us. And how are you?
Sure, doing great, Paul. I'm sitting in the press box waiting for us to play Belmont here at 6:30 our time. So it's great. You caught me in the perfect time, but good to be on with you.
I have seen this before and heard it from friends, but I think the audience would be intrigued because, you know, sometimes it takes a long time to get a prime job like you have now, especially with the absolute zeal for Ole Miss baseball. But you apparently got started pretty early.
Yeah, Paul, I started basically in high school, to be honest with you. I kind of tricked my way into this job. I was a senior in high school. My mother was professor of theater at Ole Miss, and I used to hang out of her office a lot. And radio TV was under theater, and a campus radio station, which was WCBI at that time, was carrying Ole Miss baseball. And it was on cable only. The students were gone. The professors were gone. And this guy comes blowing out of the station next to my mother's office. And he said, "I got to find somebody to do these games. Everybody's gone." And so I told him, I said, "I can do them." He said, "Who are you?" And I told him who I was. And so he thought I was a freshman at Ole Miss, which I was not. I was a senior out of Lafayette High School. But I did the 77 SEC tournament for Ole Miss on the campus radio station as a 18-year-old. So that's how I got my start. And they got hired by the local radio station the following years at this jockey. You know how all that goes. And started doing baseball in 78. At baseball and women's basketball through 88, and became the lead announcer in football, men's basketball, and continued to do baseball in 89.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You know, I always admire people not only for excelling, but being able to stay in a job that long. And I don't mean that. I say that because Ole Miss is the perfect exception. It's a perfect example. There are a lot of changes that have happened, and you never really know what's going to happen. I've seen it firsthand. With when I first started in Birmingham, the legendary voice of the Crimson Tide was out with a new administration. How do you hang on? And I don't mean hang on. How do you stay in a job like that for as long as you do, considering the politics of intercollegiate athletics?
Yeah, just don't criticize the coaches, and you're good. That's my thing.
Wish you told me that a long time ago.
Great point, because they rarely pop up, these jobs do. There's more opportunity now. I teach a class at Ole Miss. We're not teaching this spring because of the pandemic, but I teach a sportscasting class. And when I got my shot to be in radio was basically it. I mean, you didn't have the live streaming opportunities, the podcast opportunities, and all the things that are going on today. And so it has been difficult. But it's funny you should mention, I've had kids through the years that, like, Meet the Rebels Day would come up to me and say, "I'm going to have your job someday." And I thought, not soon. I've got a few more years to go, you know, thinking it back in my mind. But this past year, a kid said that to me. He's about 10 years old, and it hit me. I'm like, you might be the one, because I put in a ton of years at this point. But when I got started, John Ward was at Tennessee. Larry Munson was at Georgia. Jim Fife was at Auburn. Jack Crystal was at State. You had Kaywood Ledford at Kentucky, right. Eli at Alabama, Mick Hubert at Florida, Jim Hawthorne at LSU had just started a little bit before me. And then, of course, later we get Paul Eales out of Arkansas, Bob Fulton for South Carolina, and then more recently Dave South from Texas A&M, Mike Kelly from Missouri. But that list of names, just incredible announcers across this league. So when I first got in, I was the youngest announcer in the SEC. Felt very, very fortunate. The following year, our buddy Wes Durham came in to Vanderbilt before we went to go to Georgia Tech. He became the second youngest announcer. We're sitting at a football media days in Birmingham, which, of course, you know all about, been to several of them. And we're in our little broadcast meeting. We're looking around the room, and some of those names I just mentioned were sitting there. And Wes leaned over to me. Now, he's got a legendary dad he grew up with in Woody. But he said, "Are you intimidated?" I said, absolutely. So we were surrounded by that early in our careers, which is really, really cool and unique to get to know those men and lean on those men. And we were kind of the young bucks at the time, and now we've kind of become not necessarily legends, but longevity. We're the ones that have been around a while.
David Kellum with it. David, I know the feeling that when I was once the youngest person covering Alabama football, and I looked around like, why are these guys hanging around as long as they are? And I think they were younger than I am now.
Yeah.
I'm curious about broadcasting, and I want to get to your teaching part in a minute, but there are those legends that we all grew up listening to, and as someone that started as young as you, How do you develop a particular style?
You know, changing with the times, I think, is important to a certain degree. My area of influence, when I first decided I wanted to do radio play-by-play, and I'm the kid. I heard you yesterday. A flood of memories come back, and you talk about painting the picture and the transistor radio, and that was me. I mean, I listened to Jack Buck and the Cardinals on a transistor radio under my covers in bed. So mother forced me to go to sleep, you know, and Ben Scully on the West Coast too. And it was really good. But in my immediate influence, we had Stan Torgerson, who was doing Ole Miss, which was a wonderful announcer before I got here. You had Jack Crystal at State, who was incredible too. And then Jack Eaton in Memphis, who you probably know, I assume.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Jack was the voice of the Memphis Tigers. You remember how fast he talked, 90 miles an hour, ton of enthusiasm.
Great Scott.
Great Scott would do a commercial for Kroger that included 262 items in 30 seconds, if you remember. you would just freak out. But he came and taught a class here, and I learned a lot from Jack. And I thought, you know, when I listened to him do a basketball game, he's calling, like, every pass. How do you do that? And I have kind of adopted that through the years. I think it's important to paint that picture and to assume that you're talking to people that aren't watching TV too, that they're just strictly listening to you. And so my style kind of came out of that group. Jack Crystal was one of the first five people to call me when I got hired for the lead announcer here, which was really neat. And Jack said, David, you paid your dues. Congratulations. Hope everything goes good. And I just asked him, we call him Mr. Jack, Mississippi. I said, Mr. Jack, give me some advice. And Jack said, well, you give the score, and you give it a lot. And when you get sick of it, give it some more. You know, so that was his piece of advice. He said, the other thing he said was cut out the bull. I don't know, Paul, if I've cut out the bull as much. But I did lean on those people when I was a young announcer. Always been real enthusiastic, probably too much energy when I was younger. I'm more tempered, I guess, these days. But it was a joy to get to visit with the John Wards, and you know, not too many people knew all of those folks at that time period.
No, I agree, and it's interesting what Jack Crystal said about the score, because I'm sure you've heard it from fans, but everyone's not listening to the game from start to finish. So if you put it on the radio, you want to know what's going on.
Yeah, and if you're watching it, you got a little score bug and all those things in radio. Through the years, we've had like a timer, a sand glass, or different things to remind you to give the score on a regular basis. I've got spotters now that are sitting there timing. They tell you in football, score, and I'm like, gosh, I just gave the score. But he was absolutely right, and being able to paint that picture, you know, John did such a great job at Tennessee, was just phenomenal. He was a Ward. My family's a Ward on my mother's side, and he even said, I think I had some Mississippi people. We may be related. I said, I don't know, John. You're a lot better at this than I am. But and when he retired, Paul, you kind of mentioned when is the time to go, so to speak, and adopting with the changes and what have you. But when he decided to go, I talked to him about that point blank, the next football or basketball game I saw him after he decided to retire. And I said, why? I said, why are you doing that now? You sound good. You're still, you know, outstanding announcer. And he talked about quality of life and being able to do things beyond, you know, quote, the job. I think sometimes we forget that what we are doing, you know, what you're doing, what I'm doing is a job. But my passion's still there, and I'm looking forward to a few more years and having a good time. But I really do appreciate the roots that I got from that group of men.
David, I shadowed him once when I was a student, John Ward I'm talking about. And
did you?
It was at the end of the basketball game. I mean, he looked like he was about to die. I mean,
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. I mean, where you give everything that you have.
Yeah, no doubt. Wore the towel around his neck, you know, kind of deal. And I do that too. I think you need to spend the energy, give everything you've got to the broadcast. And John was that way. Very, very. And the prep that we do, I think some people don't realize how much is involved in that. And it was always fun to visit with those guys and get tidbits from them about what their team has been doing and that kind of thing too. But I got a great story, Larry Munson. I'll tell you quickly. I know you probably need to get rid of me, but
take your time.
Larry, you know, when he was at Georgia, and I had just been hired, probably my second year, Munson sent somebody from his broadcast crew to our booth. Now we're in the middle of our pregame show on the Ole Miss Network, and the guy comes in and he says, "Is David Kellerman here?" And I raised my hand. He said, "Mr. Munson is ready for you." And so I looked at him kind of funny. I said, "Mr. Munson is ready for me?" He said, "Yeah, we're about to do the opposing radio announcer segment. He needs you now." And so nobody had told me in advance that that's what I was supposed to do. So I looked at our engineer, John Winfield. John said, "I think you better go do Munson." So I left it in the hands of the rest of our crew, went down the hallway, did the interview with Munson. I thought, well, it's really the first time I'd spent any significant time with him. So I said, I think I'll just visit with him through the commercial break and talk to him. And Larry looked at me, Paul, and he said, "David, thank you very much. We're done with you." So I just left the booth and went down to mine. Talk about getting humbled in a hurry. Now, later, we got to know each other a little bit better. My first experience with him was, okay, you've done what I need you to. Now get out of here.
No, I didn't know him that well, but I knew plenty of people that did, and especially I've heard this from Lauren Smith that he could be pretty brusque. I'm curious about something, and you know, when you do Ole Miss or any school, you're going to have incredible highs and lows. How difficult? I mean, you're a fan too. You're trying to do a credible job. When things go haywire, how do you deal with that?
Well, especially when you're the pro cheerleader type enthusiastic announcer, you know, when things go haywire, people tell me I can turn on the radio and see if we're winning or losing without giving a score, you know. And I'm a little different. I think, Paul, if you picked me up and you stuck me at another school, I could do the job, be very effective. I think I'd be efficient at the job. But having the diploma that says University of Mississippi, I'm a graduate of Ole Miss, and so the fans expect me to be, you know, to some degree a homer, extension of the fans, and all of that. So when things are bad, I almost have a license to feel bad too, if you know what I mean, as opposed to trying to, you know, paint a sunny picture. I think the main thing is to be, you know, transparent on what's going on. We're not playing good. We're just not playing good, and people got to accept that. Or the other team's playing really, really well, and we're having struggles. And then, you know, you get to some moments in some games where the game's over early. Baseball's a great example of that. I know you followed the sport a long, long time, but, you know, like today, I think LSU gave up 8 runs in the first. Well, the game's over, and so now you've got 3 hours. Poor Chris Blair had to do 3 hours of radio knowing that the game was basically over. So those are difficult.
Let me ask you about the classroom, because, you know, I mean, yeah. My parents always acted like we were the worst generation, and I know it's just a habitual thing with time. But what is it like talking to young people about wanting to do what you do, and how do you try to temper them that it's not that easy to get jobs like the one you have?
Well, I think they're shocked, Paul, when we tell the stories. And, of course, I don't think it's quite as bad as our early days, but I heard your Shreveport story yesterday. You know, trying to figure out what do I do, where do I start, and those kind of things. There are more opportunities, but not a ton. It's not like some other careers, that's for sure. And so I've had Mike Morgan come in and speak. I've had other people speak to that class through the years. And, you know, Mike talked about sending out 13 packages to radio stations all over the country. He ended up eventually at South Carolina doing their baseball before he got into the TV world. But you just one rejection after another, and you got to have thick skin and keep trying and keep sending. And I think that's eye opening for them as a younger generation, because, you know, the it's almost like a drive through mentality now. I get my degree and I go get that great job, and the pay the dues part of it sometimes they don't understand or don't want to have to deal with, but it's just one of those things where you pretty much have to, especially in this particular field. So we have discussions of that nature, and you can tell pretty quickly if somebody's really serious has the gift of doing whatever it is in our industry they may be interested in doing. And then sometimes you see some students, you just go, you don't want to be the one to tell them, say, hey, you really shouldn't be in this field. But sometimes they fall in that category. But we've been very fortunate. Our journals department is really, really strong. We've placed people all over the country, and it's been very successful in getting people pretty decent jobs.
Final question, because David has a baseball game here. David Kellum, in terms of what you do, I had a young man call me the other day. I want to be a play-by-play announcer, and he was asking the wrong person because I've never done a game. What would you tell young people listening who ultimately want to get to a level, whether it's at a big school like Ole Miss or a smaller school?
I think the number one thing, Paul, is to go find something, in the industry. You gotta get your foot in the door, and so you gotta get to some level of work, and that could be high school games. It could be board opting. I know that our company, Learfield IMG College, allows younger people to come in and get a ground level start as a board op, a studio host, and then they eventually move into play by play. Several guys have done it that way as well. And it just depends. A lot of more women are interested in radio play-by-play and doing sidelines, et cetera, and more talk show stuff. So that's really encouraging to see that it's open to a lot of folks. And I think that as we continue to kind of move with technology, there's going to be more and more opportunities. One of the students in one of the classes I had, Paul, got a job with ESPN working on one of their Twitter sites only. That's her full-time job. And so that didn't exist when you and I came along. We didn't know what Twitter was, So there are some more opportunities, but it's one of those things where you just got to keep knocking on doors like the good old days.
Well, I can't thank you enough. This has been a blast to hear your stories, and we'll let you rest your voice for a minute before the game. But thank you for coming on, and
sure.
I'm so intrigued by what you're doing, especially not only behind the microphone but in the classroom.
Well, no problem. Love it. And, hey, in the dead of the summer, you can get us all together. Maybe we just do some shows.
I would love it.
Struggling finding content. That's what we need to do, huh?
I think it's a fantastic idea. Hey, thank you, David. You be well.
Okay, Paul. Thank you.
All the best. David Kellum from Ole Miss. We are going to take a break. We'll talk to Brooks Cabina at the bottom of the hour on the ugliness that is the LSU investigation into Les Miles, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We are back on the program, and we appreciate all of you being here, and we will ultimately get back to your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We've had quite an afternoon talking about the situation with Les Miles, and I do I think before we get to our next guest, it might not be a bad idea to go over some of this. And we had Kenny Jacoby on earlier. He is the reporter who broke most of this with his fellow colleagues at USA Today. And it's a confusing story. We'll try to piece it together with you as simply as possible. It's a long report. It's over almost 150 pages. So we asked Kenny, how involved were the Board of Supervisors? That's the Board of Trustees at LSU.
They signed off on Les Miles' private written reprimand for these allegations against his students. And that's what a lot of the students I've been speaking to today have said, too, is, you know, these people have known about these issues for a long time, and nothing has been done about it until now, and until it appeared in a national newspaper.
What exactly, we asked Kenny, were the accusations against Les Miles?
Les Miles was accused of sexually harassing at least two, if not three or more, student workers who worked in the athletic department. He essentially wanted a role in personally interviewing them and selecting who would be picked. And he, what we learned today is he had a preference toward blonde women with large breasts who were, you know, particularly attractive. He wanted this as a way of sort of selling it to potential recruits, selling the school. As far as the sexual harassment, what we learned is that he, you know, when he hired these young women, he sometimes offered them to help their careers later down the line after they graduated, and then kind of turned that into a more personal relationship with them. And then ultimately, one of the women said he kissed her alone when he was driving her in his car. One of the other students that was mentioned in this report today said that she had a very traumatic experience when she was alone in a room with him, and alleged some sort of unwanted touching, and this had such a profound impact on her that she basically up and left.
The big headline of the day involves Joe Oliva. He is the athletic director who wanted to fire Miles, but ultimately he did not.
The athletic director found his conduct so disturbing back in 2013 that he said he thought they could fire him over it with cause. But instead, they essentially swept the thing under the rug, didn't tell the public about it, gave him a private letter of reprimand and made him attend counseling, but then kept him around for another 3 years until he started losing games. So, I mean, if that doesn't tell you who really, you know, has the power and the influence at that university, then it's hard to say what does.
And finally, we asked Kenny, how widespread were the problems?
These problems at LSU were pervasive and not just limited to, you know, members of the football team or athletic department. There was a neglect for providing the proper and appropriate resources to be able to handle sexual assault and domestic violence complaints appropriately. There was severe understaffing, but when they did even, you know, process complaints, often they would result in basically slaps on the wrist. You know, students who'd been found responsible for rape being allowed to stay on campus under probation.
So that that was earlier. There's the reporter we just got through talking to, Kenny Jacoby, is out with a new story with his team, and he telegraphed this when we talked to him. But the new story involves students at LSU. They seem to be about the only folks outraged. I know columnists are calling for Miles to be fired at Kansas. I mean, that's not going to matter. You know, he's only won three games there. Calling for the athletic director to be fired there. Both of them probably will go. I don't think they can be able to withstand the heat. But according to Kenny's latest in USA Today, the students on the LSU campus are very unhappy. So far, the school has announced two administrators will face suspensions for their failure to report. But students are now saying that that is not enough. The co-founder of the student group, Tigers Against Sexual Assault, saying there's a myriad of people who need to be disciplined. You can't recognize that you failed and then keep everything the same and keep the status quo. LSU launched this investigation not because of something they felt needed to be rectified. They launched it after the reporting by USA Today. And in the 148-page investigative report revealed today, they pretty much acknowledged that. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions. I know that's a cliche, but that's also where this thing is. We will talk more about it with Brooks Camino when we come back. Sometimes our food is more than just food. It's an integral part of our community. So this year, Discover is giving $5 million to support Black-owned restaurants to places like Rodney Scott's Barbecue in Charleston, Post Office Pies in Birmingham, Back in the Day Bakery in Savannah, and hundreds more places in your local community all across the country. To learn more, go to discover.com.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
We welcome you back. The final 30 minutes of the program, and so much of our time today has been dealt with what the biggest story coming out of Baton Rouge has been. And I know Andrea Gallo and Brooks Cabina have been at the very vanguard of the coverage. And we wanted to talk to Brooks about this day and where we are all going from here. Brooks, thank you. I know it's been a long couple of weeks or months for you, and we appreciate your time very much. But we'd like to start with just before we get to the specifics. What's been the reaction to this incredible document that was released earlier today?
Well, there's lots of reactions, Paul, right now, and one of them namely being a lot of some disappointment from students and survivors of this who expected a little bit more from response from LSU. The discipline with people so far has only been with the executive athletic deputy director Verge Osbury and assistant athletic director Miriam Seeger. Those were the two who were placed on a temporary leave without pay, and they have to go through some training for sexual harassment, sexual assault training. But no one was fired. Those were the only people involved in the decisions today from what President Tom Galligan said, and some people felt there would be more. There was one former LSU alum, Caroline Schneider. She opened up the LSU Board of Supervisors meeting this morning by basically saying that she expected them to do more, and that they were only there because USA Today started an investigation, and beforehand nothing was being done. And people haven't held back here, but you're starting to see that reaction there initially from the people around here. But at the meeting today, the reaction immediately from LSU administrators and people who hired Hush Blackwell to do this, you could tell that they understood the sense that people were expecting great change. And to Galligan's, how he responded this morning, and he said that they were committed to change, and that this was, he repeatedly talked about how today was a dark day in the LSU's history, and that they were trying to move forward to something better, and admitted to the faults that they had. So it was interesting. In the report itself, Hush Blackwell wrote that they even sensed all of the feelings people were having towards firing people for what happened at LSU, calling for jobs and people who messed up and did wrong. And they noted that they felt that sense, but in that they didn't want to recommend that LSU do one thing or another, but they wanted to produce facts and cases as they investigated it. Some of that stuff pretty damning, but they put that forth. So that's really been the initial reaction so far today.
I'll pause there for 1 second, Brooks. What else is out there? What else could possibly happen in terms of investigations?
As far as with this, reading through the 150-page documentation, it seems that it's pretty cumbersome. There were things in there where Hush Blackwell was saying, there are more people we could investigate. There are more people we could talk to. What those are, I'm not certain. But their recommendations were to at least get the ball rolling to set LSU up in a situation where their Title IX staff was appropriately staffed and that their policies were in order. And that was a main part of this report was, and towards the end of it, they showed, take, for example, a 2019 football team for LSU. All the staff members that made that championship happen, Hush Blackwell noticed that and noted it and said, you only had really one person in charge of the Title IX office and you weren't appropriately staffed. And all of these situations that happened, you weren't properly able to handle those things. So the future things that they said that they could go on and investigate, if LSU properly staffs their Title IX office, they should be able to handle those appropriately in the future.
In terms of the NCAA, I know there's the basketball investigation. I don't know where the football investigation is. Could any of this spill over into that in the realm, under the realm of institutional control?
I wouldn't know exactly how to answer that. It is a separate case that's going on in the independent accountability review process that the NCAA puts its sanctions some cases into sometimes to judge those things. And I from my understanding of it, how I've talked to people about that case, it would only judge the things that are within that infractions case. Okay. And to my knowledge, this is not part of that process. Whatever decisions they make based on, the football sanctions having to do with, there was someone who embezzled money who gave a former player's dad a no-show job, things like that. Those are the things that they'll decide, the Will Wade investigation. Those would have implications on that. From my understanding, today's Title IX policy review won't have any implications on that.
In terms of the Title IX, that seems like that whatever resolution they come up with would be a long way off, and it would not really impact the athletic department. That would be more of an institutional situation, would it not?
That's my understanding. I mean, there's not to say that that the NCAA might take up a review of it itself, but. Between the two things, and there are a lot of things going on at LSU, so it's a fair question. It is, to my knowledge, separate cases going on right now.
Well, let's get to the story of the day, and that's Les Miles. I don't know what his reputation was in Baton Rouge before November. I would imagine it's pretty bad right now. What's the view of Les Miles in your city?
It's an interesting thing because a narrative got flipped today. Whenever Les Miles was coach here, it was kind of the idea that Joe Oliva was the one no one liked, his former athletic director, and that Les Miles was the one everybody liked. And after reviewing all of this, it came out that Joe Oliva made recommendations to people at LSU that Les Miles should be fired for the allegations that were against him. And Les Miles at the time was at the height of his popularity. They had already won a national championship. They'd gone to a second. And he was the lovable, quirky guy who gave good quotes and was a likable figure, and he went on to still do that even after he was fired. It was really part of the reason why it was difficult for LSU to fire him whenever the football team was struggling. And afterward, he still was a part of commercials. He did movies. He was a likable figure, and people still, up until the allegations came out, still felt that way about Les Miles. And people are starting to reconcile with that today, in light of what people have learned. And that's something that I'm seeing a lot of colleagues reflect on from their time covering him, even. So it's people that, you know, felt a certain way about some of the Les Miles that everybody already knew, and now there are more information out there about what actually happened at the time.
Brooks Cabina with us. Brooks, back to the situation for those who may be joining us late. Detail the information that became available that you have reported and others have as well, and leading up to this, about what Joe Oliva faced and what he tried to do.
Sure. At the time, around the 2011 to 2013 time period, there were two former students who alleged that Les Miles had sexually harassed them. And this one of those cases went, this person reported it to her supervisor, who then reported it subsequently up to Oliva. And Oliva asked the, there was a separate law firm at the time, Taylor Porter, to investigate Les Miles over this. And once they found the findings through independent fact-finding, Joe Oliva sent an email to a couple of powers that be at the time, one of them being former president of the university, F. King Alexander, detailing and saying that he thought there was enough there to fire Les Miles for cause. And in his contract at the time, there were a few... Sorry, I got a call at the same time.
That's
it's
okay.
Been a busy day, so I had to look and make sure. there was, you know, at the time, he was out there looking at the information, and they reflected upon that, and he sent an email to F. King Alexander saying that he thought he had enough for information to fire Les Miles for cause. The board members and those that were a part of the Taylor Porter investigation who saw it, I talked to a former one yesterday, Bobby Yarborough, and he said that at the time they took the recommendations of Taylor Porter, which was that law firm, and it wasn't enough in that law firm's purview that what Les Miles' allegations were, even if they were true, qualified as legal definitions of sexual harassment. Hush Blackwell says they disagreed. They reviewed all of that. So they would have recommended that Les Miles, like Joe Oliva, felt that he'd be possibly fired over that. And Joe Oliva did recommend that he be fired. But obviously those actions were not taken. If you weren't familiar with what the allegations were, that's on theadvocate.com. You can find that. But in brief, one student alleged that Les Miles, once she was hired to work in the recruiting department, he texted and Facebook messaged her, and then whenever he found out that she was interested in sports marketing, started texting her more often, saying that after she was done at LSU, she might possibly be able to work for him. And then, he asked her, while they met in his office alone, asked her to put her phone number in his private phone and to put it in as an alias, and that he'd do the same in his phone. And then after texting her further, went to pick her up off campus in a car, drove her around, and then after being behind the athletic facilities, allegedly kissed her twice. And Les Miles has repeatedly denied this. And we got a hold of him too for that story, but those were the allegations that were involved in that story. And Oliva felt that that was enough to at least ban him from individually meeting with students one-on-one, and he did have to take some classes with an attorney to learn from these things. So those were some slight disciplines at the time, and in the 8 years since, no one has publicly known about this. And that's the other troubling thing that Hush Blackwell points out there, is that the LSU and Les Miles went to great lengths to keep this out of public view. There was no record at the university. They had to go to off-campus legal counsel to find this, and also with Les Miles' attorneys. So there's a lot of part of that story that came to light in the Hush Blackwell report today.
Brooks, I know it's been a busy day. We really appreciate it. I know how confusing and complex it is to break away for this long, but thanks for sharing the information, and we will hopefully talk again next week.
Absolutely, anytime.
Great stuff from Brooks Cabina, who has done such an extraordinary job reporting this complex story.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, we made it to the end of the week. Appreciate you being a part of the show. We will see you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.